Great. Well, thank you very much and good morning. It's a real honor for me to be here. And thanks, Mike, for your kind words and also for giving me probably the experience with the toughest act to follow. So, but it is an opportunity for me to talk about something I'm passionate about, which is how we're using quality improvement to advance care along the cascade. And so what I'm going to do is very quickly define some concepts, talk about some national initiatives, statewide initiatives, city and county initiatives, and then some, I think, some great clinic examples of drilling down data and talking then about some innovative examples that bring the future to the present. So really quickly, it's possible there are some people here that don't know what quality improvement is, and I use this as a quick way to underscore the difference between quality assurance, where we're looking for defects and trying to get rid of those problems, and quality improvement, which is on the right-hand side, which is trying to minimize variation in performance in a system and then move that performance to a steadily increasing level so that we're achieving the goals or the targets that we want to achieve so that we can improve our system, since if we don't, every system will continue to achieve exactly the results that it achieves. I also want to introduce the concept of robust process improvement. This concept was defined by Mark Chasson and Gerald Loeb from the Joint Commission. And this gets into the concept of really using data in a sophisticated way, reliably measuring the magnitude of a problem, identifying its root causes, and measuring the importance of each cause, finding solutions for the causes that are most important, proving the effectiveness of those solutions, and then deploying changes that allow us to make the long-term changes in those systems. So I'm going to start with some national improvement initiatives and with the work of the National Quality Center, which has been funded through HRSA and supported the first ever HIV quality improvement campaign, which focused on improving retention and care, and it was launched in 2011. Ryan White providers and grantees were invited to join voluntarily and at no cost. They agreed to participate for a minimum of 12 months and report every other month on four key measures. This was a real campaign. So there were materials and there was a video, and you see some of the materials that were used, and these were widely disseminated across the country. There was access to coaches who were expert in implementation of QI across the country. Regional groups were created, monthly conference calls and webinars focusing on the content of retention and to promote that peer exchange and learning that's so important. And then there was a separate consumer component as well called Partners in Care, which allowed people with HIV to come together and focus on retention and why it was important for improving their own care. So the campaign involved 687 providers and sub-providers from the Ryan White program, and ultimately over 470,000 individuals were included in the reporting from this campaign. And you can see the sites and the red dots here on the map. And here are the results from the campaign, the impact that was had. And what you can see are steadily improving trends in all of the four core measures. And these are the measures that you're probably familiar with from the Ryan White measures and the national strategy measures, the retention gap measure, the medical frequency visit measure, both for established patients and new patients, and then importantly, the viral load suppression measure on the lower right part of the slide. And again, these are large-scale numbers from across participants in the campaign. The second initiative was the H4C Quality Improvement Collaborative, H4C standing for the HIV Cross-Part Care Continuum Collaborative, which again, through National Quality Center, established a self-supporting learning collaborative across five states over the past 2 years. And this involved joint quality improvement activities to advance care that increase viral load suppression rates within a region and to coordinate care across states, cities, healthcare programs, and supportive service agencies. The activities were modeled on the IHI Breakthrough Series of collaboratives. For those of you that aren't familiar with that, it involves Several learning sessions spaced out over a 12 to 15 month period where teams come together to share their data, but in between is where the work happens, where each region then test changes and measures what they're doing, and they report back what they've learned. There are, again, four core measures submitted bimonthly for aggregation. There was a separate non-suppression cohort updated by states annually and submitted for aggregation and discussion. States submitted their cascades, talked about them. Again, there were support through educational calls, affinity calls of different groups who were participating, and operational calls. The five states you can see on the map were New Jersey, Ohio, Missouri, Arkansas, and Mississippi. And here you see the results over 2 years. Again, each line on the top graph and the bottom graph represents one of the states. Arkansas was somewhat challenged with their data processes, so you see the dip and then coming back up. But there was, again, steady improvement in viral load suppression. And then states worked to disaggregate their data by different groups. And what you see here are at the bottom is improvement according to race over time, again, in all of the groups affected. So turning now to states, and the first state I'm going to talk about is Mississippi, since it was also participating in the collaborative, and a lot of this work was spawned by their participation. So Mississippi took this work, and back home they held 7 face-to-face meetings with all of their grantees, including parts B, C, D, and F, and created their statewide quality management group. They had 13 monthly conference calls, and they had in-between meetings in person as well. There was technical support available to all group members, a consumer training, and then data was submitted continuously. You see here again that over time, results improved both in the access to antiretroviral therapy, the gap measure with the rates decreasing and viral load suppression increasing. So what did they do? So here's an aggregation of some of the different changes that were tested in Missouri. And you can see the individual sites are listed here. And there was improvement across the board. But there was health literacy using TeachBack, the drilled down data at the site level, some examples of which I'll be showing shortly, a specific patient visit adherence tool, navigation services, and then collaboration between some of the clinics with their local jurisdiction. I'm not going to talk much about Alabama because you're going to hear about that from Mike and the panel this afternoon, but just to give a shout out to Alabama, they've done some great work. And I'm also going to talk at the same panel on our New York Links work, which is how we bring together providers in New York State on a regional basis in line with our Ending the Epidemic initiative, mainly through using cascades at all different levels from state, county, city, and at the provider level to drive using that data for QI work, and it will look something like this, where we have a state cascade, a county cascade, and a clinic cascade. But more on that this afternoon. Some examples from across the country, cities. This is Chicago. Chicago has just launched their first dashboard, and I think what's particularly interesting about their dashboard is that they're using it with their supportive service agencies, and so they're tracking how often they're actually developing care plans on a regular basis and correlating that with viral load suppression, and this is just rolling out now. Julie Dombrowski shared her slides with me from King County in Seattle, and she'll be here tomorrow. But I think what you see here are some of the activities that are going on in cities across the country where there are out of care lists being provided to the county, which can then give information back to tell people whether or not patients are engaged in another location, so they don't really need to go farther. They're actually able to match with health information systems in terms of and find out whether somebody's been admitted to a hospital or an emergency room and send a message is a great place to get people back into care. And then they're also able to take the patients that are most challenging to engage and intensify services through their outreach workers and DIS workers and interview them and provide navigation and incentives to get them into the local STD clinics where they can get more intensified support and service. And so there's an example of a city and county that is working across its jurisdiction to intensify the services for people who are most likely to fall out of care. And this is a summary slide here. Julie has actually taken this a level further and done formal investigation to study the effects of the initiatives that she's undertaken. And there are some that show limited effect or no effect, but I think we have to go back and look at this information because we're starting with that denominator of unengaged that doesn't necessarily tell us who's been transferred out of care or people who have been lost in the system and are reengaged. And so it really, I think, makes us go back and say, well, are we reaching through this initiative those patients who are most vulnerable, the ones we really need to reach, and are we having success with that? And so I think we want to go back and look at things that way. In New York City, my colleagues have done a number of different things. The field services unit with DIS workers have been engaged to help get people back into care, and this has been published by Chichi Udiagu, and you can see here that 409 people living with HIV were located and confirmed to be lost to follow-up, and 77% were linked to care, 59% who had been in care and were out were brought back to care, and so there's been success with this initiative. In New York State, regulations were recently passed that allow public health units to share information now about whether people are in care. It had been very rigorously restricted in the past. And so the city has developed a very rapid turnaround system now where if I'm working in a hospital, I can call up right away and say, this person has been lost to care. The city will say, you don't need to worry about this person. They're engaged someplace else. Or you do need to worry about this person and find them. And then most recently, they've started to produce care continuum dashboards. And these dashboards look at viral load suppression rates, and they're able to actually take those rates for different providers across the city and compare them and use that as a way to motivate these providers to improve care and provide specific technical support. And they do this together with us in partnership at the state level. So I'm going to turn now to upstate New York, and this is Monroe County. Now, Monroe County has also participated in our statewide quality improvement initiatives, New York Links, and they started looking at their linkage rates, and these are based on patients given to them or found in the surveillance system who are shown not to be linked. And as you can see, back in 2012, only a quarter of the patients had been linked. And so they started their own improvement project, and this involved partnering through the collaborative with the agencies in the region. So there's one big hospital, the University of Rochester, a big health center, a big community health center, Jordan Health, and they developed partnerships with them and formal agreements. And each of those institutions, together with the county, went back and reexamined their processes and realized that there were a number of delays in getting people into the system who were being referred. And each of them created their own model. One was called the crisis captain, where there was somebody always available as soon as somebody was escorted to the facility to help them get into the system and into the appointment. And the other was called the SWAT team, which was a social worker group at the University of Rochester Hospital, which focused on these patients who were newly engaged to work with them to get them accepted into the facility more quickly. And they've had really great success with their linkage rates over time and have really now linked all of the patients successfully or accounted for them. Here again, you can see the numbers. It doesn't show up well on my laptop, but I guess you can see it there. Okay, so I'd like to turn now to the facility level and how we're using QI to achieve results. And so I'm going to show you some examples of what we call drilling down data, facility level cascades, and then a couple of specific quality improvement projects. And I think this is what we want to see if you look at this graphic here, where those small process improvements at the facility level will result and contribute to regional improvements and, again, to statewide improvements and national improvements over time. So using that principle of robust process improvement, which I mentioned, we teach providers how to drill down their data. And for most of you, this may be straightforward, but it really is something that hasn't been routine in most healthcare facilities. And so we teach them to take their list of patients who are either not suppressed or not retained and look at each individual patient and create a list of the reasons why they are not retained or not suppressed, and then tally those reasons and look at a frequency distribution. And this is based on another very straightforward quality improvement principle called the Pareto chart, where we want to actually quantify and focus our activities on the most common problems so we achieve the maximum impact, otherwise sometimes known as the 80-20 rule. And so here's an example where in this particular clinic, most of the patients either had transportation or disclosure issues. In this particular example, they were also looking at their clinic-wide viral load, and they did a summation of the total as well. So they were able to use that as a way to also set their priorities. Mississippi standardized this list and shared it with Chicago, and so there's a way to take the most common problems that we face across the country and categorize them and use them. There still may need to be adaptation for different settings, but I think you can see the common problems here: people who are not adherent, people who have transportation problems, and then also sorting out the numbers, of course, to those that have either died or have been transferred or who've relocated. So the University of Mississippi took this information and identified 383 patients initially who were not suppressed. And of course, the first step was to remove those who had transferred, relocated, or died. And then once they found those who were truly out of care, they were able to refer those to the state health department to find those patients. And you can see their frequency distribution on the right. Again, the most common problem here is the patients who were motivated, but they had other problems as well. The most elegant cascade that I've seen is the one that comes from Thrive, Alabama in Huntsville, where they've looked at their data and been able to show how they're doing with their entire active patient population. And you can see the drop down at viral load suppression, which prompted them to then use that for the focus of their quality improvement project. What they were able to do was identify some of the patients by the time they looked at them who were already suppressed, those who were on their way down, and those who had chronic adherence issues, and then those who were out of the clinic, so they could focus their resources most efficiently on those who needed the assistance, who were having chronic adherence problems. We're taking this now in New York and making this an expectation. So this is our organizational assessment tool where we go in and look at the quality management programs at every facility. And we've now, as part of our Ending the Epidemic initiative, set a standard where we want every facility to calculate their own cascade and look at their patients and see who's retained and who's suppressed and who's not, so that can drive their improvement work. So here's an example of a QI project from the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago, where they focused on viral load suppression. And they've done a really great job here, where they drilled down their data, and they, after they were able to sort out patients who were still engaged in the clinic, they identified mental health issues as one of the most significant concerns in this population. And what they realized as they brought their team together was that the mental health or behavioral health team wasn't really interacting with the HIV team. And so they started creating a more integrated system where the two sets of staff met on a regular basis, reviewed the client care plans from this group on a daily basis, and then were able to share responsibilities, fill in for one another, and really intensify services for this particular group, which also often turned out to have other needs that had to be addressed as well. And they've seen some promising results. This is a relatively new project, but in their first round of data, they're starting to show a trend in improvement. So that's a really quick tour of some examples of what's going on in states, cities, and clinics. And I wanted to take a couple minutes and share what I think are some really innovative examples with you, principally focusing on use of data. I'm going to talk to you about Housing Works in New York, the Alliance of Chicago, and I'm going to talk to you about some work that's going on in Haiti, and then close with some examples from how we're hoping to work with our regional health information organizations in New York more closely. So Housing Works is a large community-based AIDS organization in New York that provides many different kinds of services and is funded through many different agencies across the state. And they provide housing, behavioral health, substance use services, and they also do provide primary care. And in addition to their clinical electronic medical record, they created a separate electronic system called EiCare that is being used by all of their service providers across their agency. They've been able to link that information with the clinical data exchange, or RIO, in New York City called HealthX. And so that enables the two databases to talk to each other, and alerts can be sent from the RIO back to Housing Works that show when somebody's either visited the emergency room, been admitted to the hospital, and it goes not just back to the physician, but it goes back to the community-based agency workers, so they get an alert directly that an individual has shown up in a hospital or been admitted. This then also comes to an email. They get alerts in their email system. These can be saved as a record to go back and see the exact history of the patient. And the alert goes out to all the team members who are participating. And so this is the first example that I'm aware of that's comprehensive, that focuses on bringing the service agencies into the electronic system loop and allows them to act quickly to intervene with somebody who's physically in an institution and then work to re-engage them and get them back into care. It's a really great model. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the Alliance of Chicago, this is a health information network that was supported by HRSA of community health centers in the city of Chicago, and they created this joint venture that allowed them to share their electronic medical record systems into a data warehouse, and they all use the same EMR. And so the health centers interface with the Alliance for getting their data. The Alliance also works across the country, but the focus of this information is in Chicago. So clearly, electronic health records can provide decision support through alerts, prompts, and reminders. They can help us with electronic ordering and medication prescribing and notes. And these are all interventions, and they can all also improve care. But when we focus on specifically on quality reporting and analytics, it means thinking how we package data, how we present it, and how we make it most useful back to providers so they can translate it into action. And so the three categories of QI interventions here are the reminders, using the data to support retention, and then using data for population health. So here's an example of one of their fields related to HIV education and self-management. So these are prompts that can be used in real time to track what's happening. There are reminders at the point of care, so you know immediately whether somebody needs a test done. And then they're also able to track that performance over time. And this is all coming out of the EMR so that the providers don't have to generate this themselves. They also have now created a monthly quality dashboard, and this can be done for each of the participating centers and then benchmarked as well. Then they have the equivalent of a heat map on the right, and this is all built into the system. And the beauty of this is that this is all done at the central level, sort of like what I think we heard from Mike Horberg about Kaiser this morning, where this can be done in one place and then distributed across to the health centers. They also are able to send messages out directly to contact patients and providers. To contact patients if they're out of care, and this can be done through phone or texting. So what does this look like for population health? So the example I have from the Alliance is about influenza, but I think it makes us think about what we might be able to do with regard to HIV. On a weekly basis, they're able to extract symptoms from the EMR and send to the health department, just focusing on the influenza symptoms. And it's compiled with data from other sources. And what they've told me is that they can actually pick up the epidemic faster from their system than the traditional reporting system. So it's an enormously powerful tool that can be harnessed. And I think it gives us pause to think about what we might do related to HIV that could trigger action as well. So some considerations, and it looks like some of the slide got cut off, but successful implementation and use of health information technology is more than just the system. It really requires people, processes, and technology. We heard that again this morning from Mike, and I think it's something that needs to be invested in. There's got to be structured fields in the EMR that are uniform in terms of translating into numerators and denominators for measures and reporting algorithms that allow appropriate criteria that might not just otherwise be part of what you enter at the point of care. So there has to be mapping to what your measures are. There needs to be direct access to the data by staff and a process to validate the data and ongoing training and coaching to keep the system used and as it gets updated. I want to turn now to another example, which is in Haiti. And, you know, it's actually really ironic when you think that one of the poorest countries in the world has one of the most sophisticated systems in terms of its HIV electronic medical record. And in Haiti, ITEC began developing their EMR, eSante, at the request of the ministry and CDC. And it's a medical record that supports both individual and population health care of patients in Haiti. Over 100 sites use it, including government facilities, private hospitals, faith-based organizations, NGOs, and other networks. They have over 160,000 patient records. And then a number of the sites now have their own servers so that they're not subject to a central server outage, which had happened in the past. This just gives you a sense of the levels of the health system where we're looking at donors who then provide support into the ministry, which then provides support into the departments or the regions, which then feed into the point of service. There are a number of different reports that are available, and this is just a list of the different kinds of reports and care reminders that are available that I think you've seen in other systems. You can get an updated list of visits that are scheduled. And I think what now has happened is that the EMR is feeding into their monitoring and evaluation system. And then this, in turn, can, again, feed quality improvement work so that, again, the providers don't have to capture data separately to do their QI work. It's already in their system, and they get their report. And it's really advanced the way in which they're able to implement QI in a way that can't happen when people are so focused on organizing their patient case lists to get started. They have an aggregated report of all the measures by facility. And here are a couple of examples of how, at the national level, data were tracked where they could show improvements in cotrimoxazole prophylaxis, and then gather some of the activities, but also take intervention at the national level. So here, when they realized they had a problem, they had to take action and disseminate guidelines. They encouraged the sites to focus on sharing case lists between the pharmacy and the clinic, and promoting systematic entry of data, since there had been a gap in the way the information was being shared between pharmacies and the clinical teams. For PMTCT, and again, you can see the dips here and what happened during the earthquake and during the cyclone, fortunately with recovery, where again, the national activities that were spawned by this were to revise and disseminate guidelines. They heard from the sites that patients wanted female case managers, and so they helped recruit them, increased the tracking of women in the community, and it made the dispensing of treatment more expeditious. The project I want to go into in a little more detail is ART enrollment. And so back in 2012, when they looked at the aggregated data, they saw that only 40% of eligible patients were getting antiretroviral therapy. And they required that all of the ART clinics worked on this as their focused quality improvement project. And here's an example from one particular clinic. This was the Hospital of Pai. And so here they used their EMR data to start the project, came together, investigated with a root cause analysis, with a fishbone, identified the most common causes, tested their changes, and then went to implement. And what they found was that they needed to increase patient awareness. They needed to reduce the time of waiting to get ART. There was a national policy that required a certain number of counseling visits before patients could get on treatment. And they were able to reduce that and no longer require that. And then found a number of other barriers related to adherence that required counseling and more peer involvement. And so there were a number of different interventions that were implemented across the country. But again, the drive and the national attention to this, using the data, pushing the QI activities, resulted in a significant improvement over time. And they found that the most powerful impact was had by the reduction of the wait, because they were losing patients who were initially identified for treatment but then didn't stay engaged while they were going through the pre-counseling process. And when aggregated across all of the sites, you can see the steady increase. The different color lines just represent the initiation of reporting, but you can see a significant trend over time. So now Haiti is actually taking this linked M&E system and their EMR system, and they're moving into the community with it. And again, this is an incredibly advanced application that's been developed through CDC funding and PEPFAR by NASTAD. And this brings together their testing database and EMR with a new application in the community, which is called their patient retention and linkage data. And it's being collected on a tablet in the field. And I'm just going to show you what this looks like. So the community health workers go into the field, and they're able to identify patients, track their location, and then identify the reasons why they're not engaged in care. This is what the overall website looks like. This is what the dashboard looks like. And then they're able to make it look, they're able to go in and look and actually quantify how many patients were actually linked to care, how many were called, how many were visited, how many had ongoing visits, and then how many they were refusing to return to care, how many were lost, or how many might have also transferred to another clinic or have died. And so this is coming directly from community health workers. So as I close, a couple of quick shots. So this is also from that same community application, but it integrates GIS mapping into that. So obviously, Haiti's not the same as a place like New York City, but when patients are then found, it turns out that some of them represented by the dots may be geographically very far from the clinic. And so instead of trying to get that patient to come back to that particular clinic, they're actually trying to get them to reengage in a source of care that's much closer to their residence. And so they're using this in a really powerful way to redistribute patients. This is an example from Vietnam that was created by Chai. And as we move toward differentiated care models where people are picking up drugs in the community, in this case in the village commune, questions become, well, how are we going to know? How are we going to track what's happening? And who's responsible? So these terminals are available at the communes in Vietnam, and each of these lines represents an individual patient, and the village health worker can actually click when the medication is picked up, and there's a terminal back at the clinic where they can see this. And there's also terminals at the province level and the national level. So it offers promise of being able to link all these different systems so that we can keep an eye on whether patients are being lost to care as they're being referred outside of central locations. And then coming back to New York and Rio's, we are hoping to work much more closely with our health exchanges. And HealthX is the largest one in New York. There are 8 Rio's in New York State, but HealthX covers a wide swath of New York City, including Manhattan and Brooklyn, and also in Long Island. And what we are able to do by looking at HealthX, and this is all very preliminary, is to find where people are touching the hospital system who have been previously diagnosed. So if you look backwards, you can see that they're positive, or they've had a viral load. They've had a viral load, or they've had an HIV visit, but they haven't had one in the past 12 months. And it turns out that people are showing up not just in emergency rooms, but in dental clinics, in mental health clinics, in drug treatment facilities. And so by having hospitals look at this information, it's a wake-up call for them, where they realize that it's not just about the patients who are enrolled in their HIV clinic, but there may be a couple hundred patients in the South Bronx in a given hospital that are skirting the system and need to be identified and brought back into care. And then finally, we've heard today about sharing data with the community and having data be used. And I want to just briefly show you our Ending the Epidemic Dashboard in New York. And Dennis Nash will be here tomorrow and will be available to talk more about this. But we now have a dashboard where our data are visible to the public, and it is increasingly interactive and increasingly adding features as we track our progress toward ending the epidemic in New York State, looking at local data as well as statewide data. So some concluding thoughts. So at the national level, we need to share population health data and create urgency about it. And we need to stimulate city and county and site level improvement. And we need to gather experts and disseminate knowledge. At the city and county, the partnerships with local agencies is key, and not just local agencies, but with the community to drive improvements and linkage and re-engagement. And again, I'll be talking more about that this afternoon. And I think what's different for cities and counties is that we need to think about how QI is part of the public health package. How do we bring QI to get people to work together and change that system that involves multiple players? Facilities can look at cascades too. They can drill down their data to identify priorities for improvement. I think the big area for improvement for most facilities is documenting those interventions and really studying what works so they can be scaled up and shared. And what's critical is the partnership between all levels in the public health system if we're going to really achieve our goals to end the epidemic. And then what about big data? So the future's here. We have big data, and we need to invest in it now. Data mapping requires time and labor, but it's worth the effort. The clinical databases are still separate from the public health databases. And in order to be maximally effective, we need to think about how to have those systems talk to each other and share data. HIV programs today are not always able to have influence on their system-wide electronic systems, particularly in large academic centers. And that needs to be overcome to maximize the fields that they're using and the reports that they need to see. And even though we have these systems, we have to redesign our workflow and staffing so that they're used effectively. So instead of what somebody may have done before, they may need to think about how they get the data into the system on a timely fashion rather than the activity that they were doing previously. We have to do a better job at sharing our innovative models and spreading them. We've got to get the data that we have in these systems to consumers. There are patient portals that are functional, and we need to create user-friendly reports so they can be used by the community. And we've got to really harness these systems now if we're going to improve the quality of care. So I think it's important to bring data and care together as one big system. And this is, again, where quality improvement is critical. We start at the point of care. We have to document it, get it into the system, make sure the quality is right, report it out, and then use it. We need to use it for decision-making that's both for patient care at the individual level and at the system level as we focus on improving those systems. So I want to thank you. I had a lot of help in putting together some of these examples, and just want to acknowledge everybody who did, and thank you.